Hi, welcome to the Afrocomb podcast. This is your host, Ropa, and I'm so excited to have you here. Listen. This is a podcast where every single episode is an interview with a person of African descent living in Europe. So why don't you come along with me as I get to hear some of the most interesting, inspiring, heartwarming, and also funny stories from some really, really, really dope people. Yeah? Reunited and it feels so good. I feel like you have to know the song I'm singing in order to appreciate that guitar solo I just did at the end. But I don't know if you guys are onto Peaches and Herb and that old school blues like I am. But the point is, welcome back. Welcome to episode 11 of the Afrocomb podcast. And guess who actually has a guest that is not herself this time around? I do. Yes, that's who. So yes, people, we are back to regular programming. If you listen to episode 10, I interviewed myself because that was the situation at the time. But we pushed through all the things that 2020 has been throwing at us, and we're back, and we have a lovely, 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 lovely guest for episode 11, and his name is Essie. I actually went to school with Essie. We did our bachelor's degree at the same uni, and he's one of those people. You know what? Let me be real with you guys. You know that person who's just on top of everything? Like, they just have their act together all the time. That is Essie, and he's also one of the most stylish people I've actually ever met in my life, and I rock with it. I like it. I really do. So that's our guest today. He is from Eritrea. He was born in London, but both his parents are Eritrean, and he's very in touch with his Eritrean roots. And he was raised in Saudi Arabia and Norway and Rotterdam in the Netherlands and all sorts of different places. But we get more into that story in the episode. I really, really enjoyed talking to Essie because he's just like bags of like smartness and wisdom. Like he says, Essie's the kind of person you ask a simple question and they make it deep, like for no reason at all. And I am here for all of that energy, like all of it. So I thoroughly enjoyed talking to him. And he's also the founder of a brand called This Ain't Regular. And I think the best way for me to describe what This Ain't Regular is that it's a storytelling brand. It's a brand that empowers people to tell their stories through apparel. And Essie is a person who's incredibly, incredibly passionate about fashion and the apparel industry. And he's worked in fashion for most of his career. He is, like I mentioned, very, very stylish. And you can see it when you meet him. And he's going to tell us more about that in the conversation and where that came from. But yeah, so This Ain't Regular. Check it out on Instagram. You can also go to thisainregular.com. But I will shamelessly plug all of these things right at the end of the episode anyway. And that is our guest for today. I love you guys. Thank you for just continuing to support the Afrocomb podcast. We are well over 3,000 downloads. And just, I appreciate you a lot. And I will catch up with you right after the conversation. So stick around at the end. All righty. Hi, Essie.
Hey.
Welcome to the Afrocomb podcast.
Thank you for having me.
We are really happy to have you here. And by we, I mean me and my other personalities, because it's just me.
There you go.
So I'm going to start with a random question. You are like one of the most stylish people I know. Where do you get like your aesthetic from, or how did this come about?
That's a good question. I mean, I think it started ages ago when I was younger. I used to go out shopping with my mom, and I was more of the mom's team, I would say, more or less. Yeah. I wasn't like team dad, I was more team mom, hanging out with aunties and her sisters and cousins. And I would do a lot of dress ups, I would say.
Really?
Yeah, I wasn't that much into team sports young age, so I was more into drawing colors and patterns. And I think that went into fabric when we were younger. My dad would always buy us clothes, like uniformal. Mm-hmm. Everybody would be the same. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't like it as much, so I would tend to rip off some stuff, which as an African parent,
They weren't rolling with that. They were not too excited.
No, they weren't. They weren't. But when I turned 14, 15, it was quite tough to get certain type of apparels from brands and designers. You would always see it in music videos on the streets. So I decided to go secondhand shopping. I'll get it there from my pocket money, which I got working as a pizza delivery boy.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Oh, wow. Okay, okay.
We go way back. So I would just like save up the money, go thrift shopping, come back home, stitch things together, and start rocking it on the street.
Wow. Yeah. How young were you when you learned how to like sew or stitch things together?
I think the first time I stitched a pair of socks, I stitched the whole, I literally just patched it up, was when I was 9 years old. My mom taught me how to do it.
Do you know that I still don't know how to sew at my big age? What? I know. I really do not. Like, I really, if I lose a button, I'm like, okay, are we just going to throw the whole coat away?
You know, if you just start it, it would just take off on its own. It's like a thing. Once you get a hang of it, it doesn't even take that long.
That's really incredible, though.
Yeah, it goes like really quick. And once you get that feeling of patching things together, it just takes off to a different thought route, I would say. So even though you would see different garments and apparel and clothing in certain stores, I was always the person who would say, oh, this is so uniform. There's so many of those.
Yeah.
I'd rather go to a thrift shop, get me something from there which is unique or doesn't get reproduced anymore, and start rocking those outfits.
Is this like a thread in your life, or would you say it's a personality trait to want to be outside the box?
100%. 100%. 100%. Because now, looking back, I never fitted like in certain circles.
Yeah.
Like, I tried to be like in a skater group or in a hip hop group or an indie rock band.
Yeah.
Like trying to fit in and trying to find your spot, but it never felt natural.
Yeah.
It was always forcing it. So being that of a young age and going to thrift shops and trying to find unique pieces and trying to stand out by just wearing those outfits.
Yeah.
I think was mirroring my personality.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I understand. Okay, I need some context. So where were you born?
I was born in London.
You were born in London?
Uh-huh. But I was born in Northwest London.
Okay.
So it was really Caucasian.
Okay. Oh, yeah, okay. Yeah. And this is where you grew up?
No, I grew up in Saudi Arabia.
Just tell me the whole story from scratch. So, just give me... I'm like, wait, what? We're in Saudi Arabia now? Okay, just give me everything. Yes.
So born in London. And we left London at a young age. Like, literally, I think at age one or two.
Mm-hmm.
We went to Saudi Arabia because Eritrea became independent. And I come from Eritrea, Northeast Africa. And back in 1991 is when it became independent. My parents... wanting us children to learn the culture, to speak the language, and Saudi Arabia was where they were stationed before.
Mm-hmm.
It's not that far over to Eritrea. Like, the distance is just literally the Red Sea.
Okay.
We could fly back and forth.
Okay.
So that was the idea of my parents, and that's why we moved back to Saudi Arabia when the independence came.
Oh, okay.
Exactly.
And then you lived in Saudi Arabia.
I grew up in Saudi Arabia up until the age of 14. Went to private schools, though.
Yeah.
Went to private schools and caught up on the culture, learned Arabic, and obviously our culture, the Eritrean culture, because we're flying over every summer.
Yeah.
And picked up the language and the culture there as well. So yeah, 14, I wasn't allowed to do my A-levels in Saudi Arabia as a non-Arab. So we had to leave Saudi Arabia. I went to Norway. did my A-levels in Norway, in Oslo.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah. I didn't see that coming.
Come on.
Shoplift turn. Yeah, okay.
Away from the desert to the Arctic. So this is cold.
That's insane.
That was cold.
Why Norway?
At first, because of safety reasons.
Okay.
You know, like Scandinavian, the crime rate is not that high.
Okay.
And the education level. The schools were in English.
Okay.
Exactly.
Okay. Yeah, that's a bonus. Yeah.
Schools were in English, and we did that research for early on. So we went to Norway just to do the A-levels at first. I did my A-levels in Norway, and from Norway, we went to Rotterdam. My oldest brother lives in Rotterdam. We're six brothers in total. And yeah, we decided.
No girls. Okay. And what number are you?
I am number from top to down, four.
Okay.
Yeah.
Middle child.
Yeah.
like right in the middle.
Yeah, that makes me unique, though.
Yeah. Okay. If that's what you tell yourself, then we're good.
Honestly speaking, I think that's the reason why I also push to strive to be.
Yeah, to be different.
Yeah,
oh my gosh. Yeah.
So a lot of factors playing in.
Yeah. Okay. So your parents did Saudi Arabia, London, Saudi Arabia, Norway, Rotterdam. And they moved with the family.
Exactly, the whole pack.
Okay, beautiful stuff.
I come from a family that literally they believe in family bond, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And up to now, up to this day, we even have like WhatsApp groups, Instagram groups, only for the family.
So
we just like text each other.
Yeah.
So we're really, really, really tight with the family. But yeah, from Rotterdam, I decided to move to Nuremberg then to study international business and technology.
Mm-hmm.
And because as well, the study program was in English.
Okay.
That was also another factor.
How many languages do you speak? Arabic, English?
Arabic, English, Tigrinya, which is the Eritrean national language. Arabic, English, Tigrinya, German. And I kind of did lose my Norwegian.
Okay.
I mean, it was a year and I haven't spoken it for at least 10 years now.
Okay. And you never did Dutch?
No.
Okay. Yeah. Well,
went there, visited. We didn't even stay long. I think we stayed for about a year max.
Yeah.
So it was more of a honeymoon phase, checking out the city.
Yeah.
And trying to figure out which direction to go to.
And then from Rotterdam, you did Nuremberg and then Berlin.
And then Berlin, yeah.
Okay. So of the places that you've lived, which one is like your favorite?
To be honest, I believe every city or every place I've lived was perfect for that time to build up my
character.
That's
so deep. But that's a good answer.
I believe I truly believe that, because I had to go through these certain different cultures and different stages in life to come to that point where I am right now.
Yeah.
Because I do believe that I enjoyed Saudi Arabia back then, not knowing about the whole, how do you say, religious aspect of what they, they overthrow women and everything, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, the whole women aspect, how they treat women.
Yes.
I didn't know that because I come from a family of boys.
Mm-hmm.
True. So you don't see that on firsthand. And my mom, being the fact that she was a housewife and at home taking care of the children, the only person who was affected by the outside world was our dad.
Yeah.
So him being a man and basically going to work, picking us up from school and everything, you wouldn't catch up with all of the culture and
but you were like sheltered in a way.
Exactly.
You were sheltered in a way. And you were also at like an international school, a private school, you said,
100%,
where the culture is in a bubble.
Exactly.
It's not reflective of the place.
I would say for that age, for instance, even movies that will come from the US were all censored. Like a movie which goes for at least 120 minutes in Saudi Arabia will be like 30 minutes long.
No way.
That was censored everything.
Oh,
you know,
my gosh. Really?
Yeah,
it's insane.
So clubs were forbidden, no alcohol. So you wouldn't even as a child think about these things because they were not there to be seen. So what you don't see, you don't know, basically.
Yeah. Okay, that's a good point. Yeah.
So
yeah.
Growing up in Saudi Arabia was, for me at that age, I just focused in school and everything a child needs to do.
Yeah.
So that was perfect for that time.
Yeah. And what is like the most... So I have three older brothers.
Yeah.
But like having five brothers is a whole new level.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
What is like the most challenging thing about just growing up in a house of boys in all the different places you've lived? Like what's the most challenging thing?
Well, that's a good question, because at first it was always trying to gain... How do you say... how do you say, the acknowledgement from the parents. You want to be that favorite boy among four, which is tough. I mean, you can't put your parents in that situation.
Yeah.
But growing up, it was always a fight of who's the best son, more or less.
Yeah, yeah, makes sense.
Amongst each other. And but in time, I think I'm very blessed to have four brothers grow up with me. The other two grew up individually. Mm-hmm. So they didn't grow up with the family. They're a bit older as well. They're in their end of 40s.
Oh, okay.
So that age level. But yeah, growing up with the two youngers and my older brother, it was like a pack of boys always acted at that young age.
Yeah.
But then as we tend to grow up, we became more solid as a unity.
Yeah.
So now it's like more we're like our best friends.
Yeah, those are your people.
Exactly.
I like that. And I guess that is the best part, because that's going to be my next question. Like, what's the best part is that you grew up with your...
Exactly.
With your team.
100%. I mean, we still... Yesterday was the same thing. My younger brother does... he has his own firm. He's 24 and he runs basically domains for various companies. And he shouts me out every evening and gives me insights on what I have to do or what I could do or how he could support. It's like every family member has their own business running.
Yes.
And they're trying to integrate each other into the whole system, the cycle.
Okay. Now... I want to tap into this whole business side of things. So you studied international business.
Exactly.
And then I met you, actually, fun fact, I met Essie when I was studying international business here in Berlin. So that's how we know each other. How did you choose this as like a direction for your studies?
So I was in the fashion industry, pretty busy running brands, helping brands expand, running as a model and doing mostly on-camera aspect.
Yeah.
And at a certain point, I wanted to start my own brand with friends. But it was, at that age, it was more of a fun factor.
Yeah.
So I didn't understand the whole business aspect about running a brand.
Right.
As per se. But then I started off with a brand 5 years in. We went up until 110 concept stores. But it was more of a collective brand. And I didn't understand how it all... function from the backside.
Yeah.
It's like the back office, I had zero ideas.
Yeah.
I just knew how to get ideas, trend scouting,
yeah,
and colorways, patterns, and that was the fabrics, storytelling. That was my major key aspect that made me unique in that phase. But when I tried to go on the back office to order sheets and try to follow up on bills and all the other business aspects, I totally lost it.
Yeah, this is something that honestly, because I somehow find myself in the middle of like the creative world and also the business world.
Yeah.
And the creative world, we totally underestimate how much goes into just running something or keeping it running.
Exactly.
We always have the concept down or the content side down,
exactly,
but like how to bring the content about or like all of the supporting functions, it's usually a black box. 100%. So I think what you've just described is how a lot of people feel. And random side note, it's also the legal side of things as well. It's why a lot of creatives are exploited.
Exactly.
It's the lack of information about negotiations or about contracts or about what you have access to or how much things really cost, because you spend so much of your time focusing on the thing, the product,
exactly,
or the thing itself, and you don't know enough about what's happening around it. So I think it's so interesting. But then this is why you decided.
Exactly. Yeah. It was the main reason I went into the business studies.
Yeah.
Because at first, obviously, it was more of the money game.
Right.
So being in that industry, everybody runs after the next dollar. So that being the fact, your creative side, it basically just shuts down.
Right.
And once you come to a corner where you're blocked in and nothing is running, you just feel drained and depressed.
Mm.
So me running with these brands and different brands and stores, I realized that nobody was willing to lay out the blueprint on how it all works.
Mm.
Everybody kept it like a secret.
Mm.
And asking individuals, even my peers back then, I used to say, well, I used to literally ask for aid and help. I would say, help me out. I'm trying to start my own project.
Mm-hmm.
And with your help and guidance, maybe we could make it a big thing. And it was always about money back then. They would say you need to have a capital of at least $20,000 to $25,000 to start off your brand. I'm like,
Yeah, okay.
I get that.
But, I hear you.
Mm-hmm. But just, I'm not asking you for the financial aspect. Just show me the blueprint.
Yeah.
And after that didn't happen, that didn't work out, I decided to go to study basically here in Berlin. Then I moved to Berlin to study international business.
Okay.
And when I started studying, it was like in a slow pace at first. Mm-hmm. And it was so slow that I tend to just shift out of the uni and start in the fashion business here and or the fashion industry itself. I just went head over heels inside and started to attack the whole system from the inside, basically trying to understand it.
Yeah.
And as time went by, the content of the university obviously got deeper.
Yeah.
And I started to use that knowledge in the fashion industry, which made it even more understandable for me.
Yeah.
In the broader aspect.
So I have two questions. Just the first one is, would you say that there are gatekeepers in the fashion industry? Would you say there's I don't want to say a group of people, but there's someone or a force somewhere that is deciding who gets access to what in terms of blueprints, like you're saying. Like, you wanted just information. Like, I just want to learn. I just want to do it. I just want to do it too. And do you think there's some kind of like a force or gatekeeper that's deciding who gets?
I would say it's less of a gatekeeper. It's more of an image that the industry is giving individuals trying to get in.
Okay.
The fact that the fashion industry is alive is because of authenticity. And this key major factor of authenticity is being overshadowed by mainstream social media. And individuals are running, I see a lot of brands coming out and trying to sell products without having a deep understanding of what they're trying to do.
Yeah.
Or trying to portray, because I mean, real is real, right? Recognize real, that's the thing. But at the same time with fashion, it's the same. So when you start, I was just at the same, like for me, how I understood it was, if you have a brand, if you set up a brand, and nobody tells you this at first, it has to be as real and as authentic as possible, and there is no gatekeeper for you, because it would just attract the right individuals. And the only way to attract the right individuals is you're true with yourself. And the fashion brand should represent your authenticity. And that way you have your target group, which will automatically come to you.
They'll gravitate towards
exactly.
It. Oh, I love that.
It is so true. And that is the blueprint I was looking for.
That's all you needed to know.
That is all I needed to know. And the rest is just negotiations. Like, that's where the business factor from the study program comes in.
Yeah.
Negotiations.
Yeah.
And I'll say, obviously, it's not all based on the university. You also need to have human skills, right?
Yeah,
social
right.
skills. You have to be bold. And I had to learn that. I think me moving to Barcelona and distancing myself from my circle and my closest people for at least a year or a year and a half taught me to become more self-confident.
Yeah.
And
okay, you moved to Barcelona after you finished your business degree, right?
Exactly. Yeah. So I moved there without any plan, no job, nothing. Nobody. I'd never been to Barcelona before. I never even Googled
it. Oh my God.
Yeah.
Never even Googled it.
I said I have to build because you get so sucked in this toxic world of individuals always misusing words such as "I will help you if you come to that point," or "if you need anything, just reach out to me." It's like terminologies that the society has used to. It's just lost its meaning.
Yeah.
So when people tell me, or friends tell me, or individuals come up to me and say, "If you need anything, reach out," I take that by word. So if I need something I know you could offer, I'll reach out.
Yeah.
So this being the fact that never happened, I decided to move to Barcelona to learn how to be independent, more independent than I was.
Yeah.
So moving there, I just had an Airbnb for, I think, 2 weeks it was. And then I had to look for an apartment. I had to look for a job. I don't even speak Spanish. So I went there and I said, let's do this. I had to get my social security number noted down in order to get a job. So everything was based on how I had to do it by myself.
Yeah.
I took all matters in my hand, started the whole process, left the fashion industry, left everything in Berlin on pause, and literally just went out of my circle and started a new circle, more or less. As time went by, I started working at Adobe and I built up the whole sequence.
Very, that's very far away from the fashion industry.
Very. It was a 9-to-5 job.
Oh my gosh.
A 9-to-5 job. Yeah. I got in there and literally it felt as if I was one out of 1,000 people. But I did stick out. I did stick out because of personality, the energy you bring in, being raw and direct and real. Yeah. And I'm a person, I'm not shy to speak my mind if it is not harming a third person.
Mm.
So that being the fact, it doesn't matter what position you're in, leader, team manager, or even my associate, I will speak the same to everybody.
Yeah.
So that being the fact, put me in a higher position throughout the phases I've been there.
Yeah.
And when I got offered a managerial position after 6 months, I decided...
Okay, yeah. Okay then.
Yeah, that was the point.
Uh-huh.
That was the point where I decided I had to leave. Because...
This is not... Did anyone else think that's where the story was going? What?
I proved myself that I'm capable of
being independent.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And if I speak my mind, I will get what I want.
Yeah.
And that was the lesson I needed to learn on my own.
There's a detail we might have skipped. So you're saying Adobe was the first time you worked outside of the fashion industry.
Yeah, exactly.
So since high school or whenever, since your very first job, you have always worked
retail,
in fashion.
Retail, fashion, they always with apparel. Always with apparel.
Oh, wow.
Always with apparel. I've been busy with the apparel industry for a long time. Obviously, I would skip out the apparel because the industry doesn't pay that much.
Yeah.
So I would definitely have side jobs.
Yeah.
But my main focus was always in the apparel industry, be it fast fashion, be it luxury fashion, runway fashion. It was always in that segment. And this was the first time where I literally shut the whole door of the fashion industry behind me and left it all there and said, you know what, I have to refresh my mind and come back with new strategies.
Huh. Okay. So now that you, like, I'm just going to separate this into two phases.
Go ahead. There was
like pre-business school SE, and now we have post-business school SE. And I guess we have post-post-business school SE because we've got SE who's been independent in Barcelona for 6 months. What would you say the biggest difference is now? Like, did you get the knowledge that, do you feel like you know what you need to know and you can move differently in the industry? Like, what's different now?
The main aspect which is different for me is that I understand myself.
Oh.
You know what I mean?
SE, yeah. I'm never expecting these answers. I'm looking at you and then you say something. I was like, I didn't know we were going there.
Yeah,
but that's beautiful. It's, okay, tell me
I
more.
I always used to look out instead of look into myself.
Mm.
So the fashion industry was always, I wanted to get my, how do you say, my touch points from other brands, from other idols.
Yeah.
But after this whole process, the university obviously gave me the knowledge of the business sector.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, it's like in a broader
perspective.
But the fact that I went to Barcelona and did that on my own, I learned that I have to look into myself what I want.
Mm.
So understanding the fashion industry from my perspective.
That's so beautiful.
Exactly.
Right.
So that being the fact, if you portray yourself in the fashion industry.
Authenticity.
Exactly. There is only one me.
Yeah.
So you cannot restructure what I bring out. And that being the fact, I had to understand this and go through all these phases to come to this point.
Mm.
Still, I have a lot to learn.
Yeah.
But the most valuable thing which I've learned throughout the whole process is to think inside out and not outside in.
That's my quote for the episode. Think inside out, not outside in. Okay, so what is SE outside of fashion? What do you like doing?
Yeah. Like me, I do a lot of sports, obviously.
Yes.
But besides that, my main goal...
Actually, on that, you know those people on Instagram who just give you pressure? Do you know those people? This is SC. What are you running for? What are you running from? What is... Every day, 10-kilometer run, SC just completed. Wow. Okay.
That was basically, literally, a friend of mine said, you can't work out every day. And I take things... these type of phrases, I take them to heart. He said, why can't you do that? I developed this mindset, the what if mindset.
Okay.
And I think I've read this book called Clarity from James Smart and David Goggins, obviously, was listening to his podcast. And the what if mentality is basically you always think, you always have that two thoughts in mm-hmm. your mind before you approach a certain sports or anything, it is a certain action. So one is saying, you know what, keep it up for later, save it for later. And the other one is, well, you could still do it. And I tell myself, if I come into that dilemma where one says relax and the other one says do it, I just say, what if I just do it? And this what if mentality became a habit. So mm-hmm. I would wake up and naturally wake up early in the morning. I developed the early working up in Barcelona. I used to wake up at 4, go out for a 10K run before work.
Mm-hmm.
And I did that
as
on
you
the
do,
daily.
As you do. Right?
I did that on the daily up until it became a habit. So I started waking up early and the what if mentality just kept on going. Mm-hmm. And when I started picking up on that, the offices in Barcelona, my colleagues, also became aware of what I was doing. And they tapped into it. So it became infectious. So people, so people started joining in the whole aspect.
Hmm.
And by the time of February, I already had half of the office training for the Barcelona Marathon. And half of them ran their first marathon, marathon with me.
Oh, wow.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, they so caught that, on.
Exactly. I just did it for myself.
Yeah.
Starting off with the what if mentality and then came back to Berlin. And in Berlin, I started lacking on running and started doing more body weight workouts.
Yeah.
And to understand my body more, basically. Yeah. Not to control it, but to understand how certain body parts work. So that being the fact, I did the what if mentality on that phase. And it led up to the point where now we have neighborhood group workouts where people just gather.
Do you know that maybe you're just a trendsetter? Like, I get it, what if mentality, but yeah. also maybe you just have the kind of personality where you set the trend and we follow.
Maybe that could be. I believe that we all share the same subconscious universal mind.
Okay.
But I just tapped into that one door.
Yeah.
Which somebody has not yet tapped into.
Yeah.
So I believe if I tap into it, I can open it for everybody else to tap in as
that's
well.
That's also a very, like, good way of looking at it.
You know what I mean?
You just said it. We're saying the same thing. You just said it better.
Yeah.
You just,
I really do believe that.
Yeah.
And the interest of individuals reaching out to me shows me that there are people out there who want to do the same.
Yeah.
Who are willing to do the same, but miss that... that example. They need like somebody to look up to, more or less. I'm not saying that I'm a perfect person, but I know that I'm going to show up every day.
Yeah,
I know I'm going to push that extra bar higher.
Yeah,
and if somebody were to come with me, I would enjoy it as well. I don't see it as a competition. I see it more as a collective unity that we grow all together. So that being the fact, for me, I feel good whenever I do those daily workouts.
Yeah, right.
And if somebody taps into it as well, it makes me even happier.
Which neighborhood is this? Are we allowed to join?
Everybody's allowed to join.
Fantastic. Okay. Yeah. So what else does Essie like to do outside of fashion? Or outside of apparel, business or work? What else do you like doing?
I'm a big fan of cooking.
Ooh, really?
I adore cooking. I'm a big fan of home cooking. I think because growing up also with my mom, always in the kitchen.
Mm.
Boys in the kitchen with the mom. Dad would be in the living room, we all would be in the kitchen. mom caught us up early on.
Yeah.
But yeah, cooking is one of my favorite things to do as well. Sunday cookings. And other than that, I love galleries, exhibitions, and good book recommendations.
Mm.
I am grateful for any good book recommendation.
Mm. You read a lot.
In the past years, I've caught up to it, yeah.
Yeah, that's really awesome. I find that something that I think I know about you, but I don't know if I actually know about you, is you're a really disciplined person. Like,
Thank you.
Because I'm the kind of person who remembers I have a lecture, like when others are already in the lecture. That's when I'm like, oh my God, like I need to, and then I run. But Essie, you're just collected, you're there already, you've probably done your 10K run in the morning. You've done the recommended reading for the lecture. Where do you think that comes from?
It comes from my dad. 100%. It comes from my dad. My dad is also a bookworm. And my dad would never go to bed without a book in his hand. He would literally sleep with books on his chest, reading a book. And growing up, he would always tell us, he would even stick it on the walls. He had it in the bathroom. He had it in our bedrooms. He had a phrase saying, if you can manage time, you can manage anything. And every time he would repeat it into us.
You know, another beautiful quote. Of course, this is from your dad. But still, if you can manage time, you can manage anything.
That's what he told us. He said, growing up, he said, it's not about having money. It's not about having knowledge. It's about managing the time. If you have things to do and if you manage your time accurately and you execute it the way it has to be executed, you will not be stressful in your life. So you have to manage time. That's where it comes from, I believe. When I have certain things that come in and I structure them in a way that everything has to be done up until the end of the week. And once you execute it, and if you have really followed that time management plan, it goes flawlessly.
Yeah. Okay, so that's one part of it, is that you're incredibly disciplined. And then the other part is this execution thing, is that I feel like you set out to do something and you do it.
Yeah.
And it also comes from your dad.
No, that came from me.
Okay.
But also, it does have to do a lot with parental guidance, obviously.
Yeah. Let's give them their shout out.
100%.
Yes.
100%.
Yeah.
They've done their part. I was always a person, I believed in words. Because if I would say something, I would have to do it. I'm not. You have individuals who say it for the sake of saying. But why would you say it if you're not going to do it? Even if it's for me, if I would tell myself, you know what, you have to do this by this and then I'll have to do it. Why would you speak it to existence? If you're going to speak it out, you have to speak it to existence. I believe you have to manifest what you're thinking. So if you say you're going to run that 10K. You better wake up and run that 10K.
Like, define saying it. Like, as in, is it like only when you say it out loud, or do you write it down, or?
I think it, you know, because thought is the first process, right?
Right.
So when you think it, it's not just that thought it sparks and leaves. I analyze it in my mind as well. I'm like, if I do a 10K tomorrow, then I have to do this afterwards and this and this and this and that. So I've already planned it in. And if I've planned it in, I know what time I'm going to go to bed. I know what time I'm going to wake up. So there is no aspect or foreign external factor that can disturb me running that 10K. The only factor that would say you're not going to run is my laziness. You know what I mean? So that comes, and when that time comes, the what if mentality kicks in. And then you just wake up and go for it.
I really feel like I need to get my life together after this conversation. SC came here to give me pressure. It makes complete sense.
Yeah, it does.
I'm more like, once I've written it down, then we're doing it. But there's a lot of steps in between writing, like thinking it and writing it down. So sometimes you never get to write it down. So you're holding yourself accountable right at the beginning.
Exactly.
Like you said to yourself you were gonna run 10K.
Exactly.
So get up and run 10K.
Exactly, yeah.
I like that.
So if I stick to it on that level already, if I follow my thoughts and keep my words, basically execute what I say, and when I speak to other individuals, to a third person, if I say I'm going to show up, that means I am going to show up. Because I already do it on that level to myself.
To yourself. How do you cope with dealing with human beings who aren't the same?
That gets difficult.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm still working on that, to be honest. Because I'm, as much as an extrovert I might seem, I believe I'm an introvert.
Okay. At the end of the day, it's about what we believe.
I would say so too.
Yeah.
I am comfortable around various people, but I rather prefer being alone because I can manage more and get more done when I'm alone by myself. And meeting with people or with friends and individuals, I'll have to take their point of view also into consideration. So whenever we make out appointments or places and locations or dinner parties, I always ask them, what time do you prefer? They tell me, when do you want to come? I say, when does it fit you best? Because I don't want to be the reason for you then to say, oh, you chose that time. So I'm giving you the freedom of choosing the time, and I'll adjust my schedule to your timetable because I know how to manage my time. And I'm not saying this in an arrogant way, but if you tell me that suits you best to come to that time, I'll arrange my timetable in a way that I'll come there on point, like on time.
I think it's also, by doing that, you're managing yourself. You're managing your own expectations because you are understanding that, okay, I'm always going to be punctual. Exactly. And if they don't do it, that might frustrate me. So how do I minimize the chances of them doing something that frustrates me? Interesting. Interesting. And like, yeah, okay.
I didn't think of it that way, though, but it's very smart.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a good take on it.
Yeah. I try.
Yeah. No, I like that.
I'm not too bad.
I like that perspective. That's really good.
Okay. So I want to know about This Ain't Regular. We've just taken a left turn.
No, it's all good.
I'm reading your shirt.
Yeah.
Tell me.
And we can have a good transition as well. Right. Because, I mean, we're talking about expectations from other individuals. And that was the reason why I also chose to run my own brand. Because I used to work with different individuals running a brand called ATF. Mm-hmm. And that didn't work out well because we had different influential factors and ideas, which were just too diverse. And with This Ain't Regular, it's basically not an apparel brand. It's literally just a brand that allows individuals, it's a storytelling brand that allows individuals to speak their story through apparel. So it could be apparel, it could be art, it could be different photography, the way they feel, music. So I want to offer a platform where individuals could tell their stories, where they're not heard from the mass media. And the first step has been with the FTP shirt from the people for the people, that each individual who received a t-shirt wanted to tell a story. So with their t-shirt, they'll be able to, we'll be posting a blog post and they'll be telling their story through the t-shirt.
You're in the right place because we at the Afrocomb podcast value storytelling above anything else. And we value getting people to tell their own stories. So,
amen, yeah.
I mean, that's really cool. Why did you name it This Ain't Regular?
Because I believe that everything happens, like, for something to be a norm, it has to be out of the norm. You know what I mean? At first.
Yes.
So being this first...
So smart. Love it. I love it. Yes.
So initiating into this direction, there has been no names, no labels. I don't want to put a label on it as well. So I call it This Ain't Regular because it's an approach that hasn't been done yet. And through This Ain't Regular, it's basically showcasing a method that could be used for every different type of communication channels, not just the fashion. It could also be through music. It could be through television. It could be through various book clubs. Everything is possible.
So you do apparel, but the concept can be translated to other things. Okay, I understand now. I understand.
Because I don't want it to be... at first, it was also difficult to explain it to individuals. They were saying, is it like a clothing brand? No, it's not. It's not a clothing brand. It is literally just a brand that allows storytelling through apparel.
So how does it work then? So it's not a clothing brand. Yeah. So you're going to have to, I'm one of the many people you're going to have to explain.
Go ahead.
To.
No.
Okay. So it's not a clothing brand.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. It is a brand with no labels. So it builds up as it goes. So we started off with the FTP because apparel merchandise is obviously the easiest way to reach individuals and showcase solidarity through apparel. And This Ain't Regular started off with the FTP project, from the people for the people, in order to highlight certain stories which need to be heard from their side of the view. So they felt as if they had a story to tell. And I want to offer them a platform where they could tell their story. And it will just build up. The next one is planned to be with essential oils. We have, her name is Mandy. And she has her own story to tell through oil classes. And we're probably going to be doing a workshop on how to make your own unique essential oil. And she'll be guiding it. And it, yeah, as it goes, it becomes a platform of its own. So I don't want to put any barriers on top by saying it's an apparel brand or it's any type of certain...
Storytelling, you know, brand, if we're going to call it anything, that's what it is.
Exactly.
That's cool. How long have you been doing it for?
I came up with the concept a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
And I've been running it through a lot of friends, and I believe I wasn't mentally there to execute it. And it would have just gone sideways if I had just started it early on. I needed to be in the mind space I am right now in order to be stable and run the train in the right direction.
Mm.
And this has been the first project that we just launched. It's very successful. The next one is coming up in 2 weeks. And now the train has been rolling, so it's going to be going on from now on.
And this, we are known as the podcast for shameless plugging. Mm-hmm. So this is your time to tell us, should we follow it on Instagram? Or do we need to buy something somewhere? Let us know. Drop the handles.
Well, due to the fact that it's a community garment brand, more or less, a storytelling community garment brand, you can find us on Instagram at thisaintregular.com.
Mm-hmm.
At
thisaintregular,
We also have the domain www.thisaintregular.com.
Mm-hmm.
And on Facebook as well, thisaintregular. But merchandise, we don't usually sell merchandise.
Yeah.
We do storytelling, so following up on the blog posts.
Mm.
And we do have here and there some products that come out and on a limited count because we don't want to overproduce fabrics as well. Just for the sake of the storytelling is when we put out merchandise.
Okay.
So when the merchandise comes out, they're a limited amount, then you can just get them as well.
Fantastic. And do you want to shamelessly plug yourself? Do you want to tell us just drop the handles. You're
come
welcome.
You can find me on Instagram at @se_testfoam.
Mm-hmm.
@ESSI_TESFOM. And if you're down for some workouts, you know, you can hit me up anytime.
Okay.
Yeah, and if you need some blueprints on the fashion industry, you know, I got you too.
Okay.
I'm spitting out the tea.
And he just also has a really aesthetically pleasing Instagram. So there's that too. What's your full name, Essie? I just call you Essie.
Yeah, my full name is Esau.
Esau.
Esau Tesfam Tak. Yeah, Esau is basically from the Old Testament.
Jacob's brother.
There you go.
Oh.
Yeah, Esau, the older son.
Okay.
Though I'm the middle son.
Yeah, but
I take credit for that.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
So my last question for you. Sure. We're at the end. Is there anything else, actually, before I ask my last question, is there anything else you want to tell us, share with us?
I want to say I'm proud of you for doing this. This is bang. I really appreciate you. Your voice had to be heard by the people, 100%.
Thank you.
Your energy is infectious.
Oh, I appreciate that.
Super proud of you. That's
I right. appreciate that. Thank you.
Keep
okay.
going,
my last question. If we were writing a book about you, and we were writing it right now, so a biography, and we're writing about Essie now in 2020, what would it be called?
The same regular.
Hey!
You're not having to plug it in.
Okay. You know, I like the consistency.
Yeah,
I respect it. You know, I have no choice but to stand. I appreciate you so much. Thank you so much for coming and dropping so much wisdom, man. Like, I'm about to get my life together after this conversation.
Bless. Thank you for having me.
And that is what I had for you today. That was my conversation with Essie. I really did enjoy it, like I said, because Essie's just so focused and disciplined as a person. And I've always known this about him because we studied together. And yeah, the last thing I'm going to tell you about Essie is follow him on Instagram, follow his brand, The Saint Regular, on Instagram as well. Check out their website, thesaintregular.com. Essie already plugged himself, but I will reiterate. His personal Instagram handle is @Essie_Testfoam. That's @ESSI_TESFOM. And as usual, if any of it went over your head, follow Afrocomb. Just follow Afrocomb Podcast on Instagram, on Twitter, on Facebook, on LinkedIn. And I'll link everything in. And it's also in the description of the episode. So that's my shameless plug. My other shameless plug for today is go to the Isuzu Fena Festival. What are you doing with your life? Like, I went to the opening night last night and it was incredible. Shout out to Adele, whose music, like Adele's voice. Man, that's another shameless plug. Follow Adele Nleto on, I don't even know if I said that right, but it's Adele Nleto on Instagram. That's ADELENQUETO on Instagram. I swear she has an iconic voice. Like, just listening to her sing sent chills down my spine. And that was yesterday at the Isuzu Fena opening. I also experienced something phenomenal in the form of Mandla's music. Listen, Mandla, if you're listening, wherever you are, or if your friends are listening, there was no need for you to do that. There was no need for you to sing about my life at the Isuzu Fena opening. Oh my God. I really thoroughly, wholeheartedly enjoyed her performance as well, because, I mean, first of all, it was the pink tulle jumpsuit or whatever she had on. Like, she just looked phenomenal. And secondly, the lyrics really spoke to me on a personal level. So that was another opening act at the Isuzu Fena Festival. And I'm telling all of you guys this information to encourage you to also go and get your life changed at this festival. Like, what are you actually doing in your house if you live in Berlin? So make sure you go to isuzufena.de and get yourself a ticket to one of the many, many, many events that they're having throughout this 1.5 week period. The festival ends on September 5th. That's when the closing party is. And yeah, I urge you all to go and be a part of that. Unfortunately, you've already missed the gloriousness that is Adele and Mandla. But I'm pretty sure there's a lot of exciting things that are still coming up. So check it out. That's my other shameless plug for today. Yes, I love you guys so, 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 so much. And you know it. You know, at this point, me saying it is unnecessary because you walk through every single day knowing that Ropa loves you. So that was always my goal. You know, I'm here to make sure you know that I care about you and that someone out there thinks about you in the 2 weeks that she's unable to communicate with you. I'm so dramatic and I'm here for all of my drama. The point is, we've come to the end of this episode. I'll be back in 2 weeks. And you don't want to miss it. You don't want to miss it. I'm not even going to tell you who my guest is. I just want you guys to tune in. I love you. Have a great start to the month of September. Go to Isuzu Fena's festival if you're in Berlin. And bye.